Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think that your version would be so much better, no one would even care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Welcome to Faking Movies. This is episode 3. No one believed that we would make it this far, but we're here to stay.
Surprised every time. Yeah.
I feel like that's our tagline. Yeah. Like, just to begin with, no one believed that we would make it this far.
Yeah. No one believed that we would stick with this for a whole 3 weeks, but... Yeah.
We'll see how long it goes. I mean, nobody knows. That's part of the fun.
Zach, well, I'm Lee. You know, hello, how's everyone doing? Zach and I actually have a YouTube show that is stranded on a third episode and is a year and a half old, so this is a monumental day for me.
Getting the plug in for a thing we rarely do, if at all. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's bake it like you stole it. But yeah, this is a monumental day for me because this is the most follow through I've ever had on anything.
Yeah, it's nice.
Ever.
So I'm Lee.
I'm Seth.
I'm Zach.
So let's get into it, I guess.
Yeah, and so to start with, Seth had a little bit of housekeeping he wanted to bring up.
Well, just that we're getting some comments from various, we'll call them patrons, of our podcast, where, one, we need to keep the episodes a little shorter, which we understand.
That is my bad. I will do better next time.
And then, two...
On Pirate 6, you'll do better.
I was told that we were watching primarily boy movies. And that we should get some rom-coms and things in there. We're aware of this problem, but Lee and I were discussing this earlier today, but we, like, grew up on rom-coms. So
yeah, the reason
it's a little
we
hard for us. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the reason we haven't done any rom-coms yet is because we know everything that happens in them.
Yeah.
We haven't watched all these action movies, but we are going to try to get better.
Yep.
We have a website that we were hoping anyone interested would comment on and give us some suggestions. Zach, if you want to give them that the web information.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I'll first mention for non-iTunes people, we are working on getting things up on Stitcher. Have to hear back from them. But in the meantime, if you want to listen
Bastards.
To things, and as Lee mentioned, comment... we have a WordPress site where these things get posted. It's fakingmovies.wordpress.com. Basically like blog format, and so you can comment there on whatever episode if you'd like to suggest movies.
Can we make a suggestion page that's more or less just a blank page where people can leave their comments?
We can sure try. I'm not super familiar with WordPress, but yeah.
I don't know how to do a single thing in any of these situations.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I mean, if you get it anywhere up there, like, I'm pretty sure we'll see it, so, yeah.
Okay.
It will probably be the first and only comment, so.
Yes, almost certainly, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so fakingmovies.wordpress.com, and then I guess we should say, you know, like and subscribe and all of that stuff. We're really breaking new ground here, movie podcasts. I think we're probably the first one to ever do that. So
it seems likely.
Yeah, so...
I don't know anyone who watches movies, so...
No, yeah, this is new territory. So if you guys want to help us climb that ladder, you know, get in there and subscribe and rate us and all that stuff, so...
So let's... Yeah, we should get into it for this week. Seth and I have gone. So far, Seth is the man to beat. This week, we've got Zach going, and he is going to describe Escape from New York.
From New York, the rom-com. Shit, no, the other one. Damn it.
So what was, do you want to tell everybody the info that we gave you, Zach?
Yeah.
Sure. So the info I was given was title, no director, and just... Kurt Russell, Harry Dean Stanton, and Isaac Hayes as featured actors.
Lee Van Cleef is also in there.
Well, I don't even know who that is. So,
also Donald Pleasance.
Yeah. Also a blind spot. I'm glad you didn't give me those people.
So, actually,
I would have written them in at the end, like, oh, and those guys too. Yeah, whatever.
Actually, Seth and I had a little bit of a surprise for you.
Yeah. Oh, God.
We are going to give you the director now.
Ooh.
The director and composer of the soundtrack.
Oh, my.
And see if that changed anything for you.
Mostly okay, just to fuck with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, can I have an hour to go back and do rewrites? Or...
No, on the fly.
All right, I'll do my best.
So the director was John Carpenter.
Oh, fucking weird. All right.
That's what
when we said director-composer, I'm thinking some director was, like, really full of himself and was like, I can fucking write the score for this, but wow, that's really
yep.
something.
John Carpenter out of left field.
Okay.
And by left field, I mean, like, John Carpenter always is.
Yeah, sure. Woof. Well, all right. I don't know if that changes much, but, like, I'll give it a shot.
All right. So without further ado, we have Zach's Escape from New York.
Yeah, okay, so lead off, I guess the two things besides that info that I knew about this movie going in were the main character's name was Snake, and
yep.
then I've also, like, sort of heard that this movie is fully insane, which, like, I didn't go that route because, like, it's kind of hard to just make up insanity. But, so the,
okay.
The, well, you know, the route I'm going, is more of a, like, mid 90s action, like Will Smith money kind of movie. Like we're, my subtitle is Escape from New York: a patchwork action blockbuster cliche.
So, okay.
Yeah.
You're just hitting all the bases.
Yeah. Yeah. So my strategy is like a wholesale ripoff of small bits of extant action movies to make sort of like a generic but like wildly marketable action movie. Like I'm thinking of like the mm-hmm. Nick Cage or like big blockbusters of the 90s, and like you couldn't go wrong, right?
Like Independence Day.
Right. There was.
So are you talking?
Yeah.
For Nick Cage, you talking like The Rock, that kind
of
stuff?
The Rock, Con Air, yeah, all of it. Yeah,
ooh, yeah, like, Con Air.
I mean, he's my reference point because my Lord and Savior, but like...
also, yeah. He's your secret dad.
He is. Oh, God, I wish. Someday I'm going to get that call, and I'm just going to be so happy. Yeah. So, yeah, kind of like comic book movies nowadays, I guess, where like they were just making them and they were like, oh, whatever piece of garbage, like, doesn't matter, it'll make $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're gonna blow a bunch of shit up, but be likely pretty derivative, but still, I imagine, financially successful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to start off, so I just got two additional actors, and then my first three were all men. So we're going zero female characters in my version.
Adrienne Barbeau is in it too, if that helps.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, all right, so I'm
wait, so I'm gonna this is your touchstone for that cast?
Well,
I'm not saying that she shouldn't be. I'm saying that that's kind of surprising based on mm-hmm. the other names.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I'm just going to lean into no women. Like
okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, sure. Like, fuck the Bechdel test. We're not doing it.
Yeah. They exist on the periphery, if at all.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like, 90s action movies, I can't think of any with, like, any substantive female characters at all. And if there were any, they'd probably be sort of shitty. So, like, whatever.
Barbed wire.
Oh, okay.
You've named one. Fine, yeah.
Pam Anderson in Barbed Wire.
Yeah, she is sort of the pinnacle of deep female character, yes.
Barb wire, like her name was Barb, and it was a really bad pun.
I'm kind of into that actually. That's not bad. But
Tank
right.
Girl,
I know that Tank Girl.
Ooh, I do really like Tank Girl. That's a good one. Was that 90s? I guess
thing.
Maybe it was.
Yeah, was it the 90s?
Oh, I don't know. She was in that Pauly Shore movie too. In the Army Now, I think. Yeah, and then House.
I
later,
do really
maybe.
Like that movie.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get this kicked off. Fade in. Kurt Russell rides a speedboat away from New York City as the mm-hmm. Statue of Liberty explodes and crumbles into the sea. Smash
yep.
cut. He wakes up in bed as an alarm clock goes off.
Oh.
This is like a power start. We're really doing it.
So
again,
the escape happens before the movie.
Nope, it's just we're just foreshadowing, or he's like dreaming it or something, you know. Like it's,
oh,
it's,
okay. So these pages,
it's
are
not like a 3 weeks earlier sort of bullshit.
No,
situation.
We're not even. Yeah, we're not even like getting the temporal aspect into it. It's just like we're just going like full cut to the chase on it because you know whatever. Who cares?
Okay,
sure.
Plus, it's in the title. Like he escapes from New York, right? I assume. I don't know. In my version, he does.
There is a pretty big spoiler in the title. You're right.
I would imagine. Yeah. all right, so Kurt Russell's life is like pretty mundane to start. He gets up out of bed, has like some sad dry toast for breakfast, gets dressed for his sad office job. There's like several minutes of just sort of establishing like how boring life is for him. He goes to work, he's going through the motions. He heads into the bathroom to take the morning dump, like even has the newspaper like very much implied that sort of that's what's going on, and he hears an explosion. So he like rustles around and he's like, "Oh God!" And then he comes back to see his desk has exploded, and this is where we get our first glimpse of like true violence, like genuine violence. There's just like body parts and crazy bullshit spread everywhere. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're not
so
going like
Let me hold on. So I want to make sure I'm following it.
Oh, we're just getting started, baby.
He lives in a very realistic world and wakes up and goes through his day, the start of his day, and walks outside to a very over-the-top action movie world.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And he's surprised.
Okay, so this is very jarring for him.
Yeah, he has no idea what the hell's going on. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so this is like hard R. Like we're getting really into it with the violence and the all that.
Oh, I love a hard R.
Yeah, we're not fucking around, for sure. Okay. So he goes out and he sees this scene, and all of a sudden it triggers something in his brain, and he has a flashback. Kind of like, I'm imagining this like the TV show Chuck. And so he sees in his brain, Harry Dean Stanton is his mentor in the secret army black ops kind of thing. And as an aside, Harry Dean Stanton, in my mind, my only reference point for him is Big Love, where he's like, I think about 140 years old.
It's okay because he's always looked like that.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I thought, right? It's like Bruce Dern. Like he's never been a middle aged person.
Oh,
he just
Bruce Dern, everyone's least favorite human being.
Oh, damn.
I think he's all right. Nebraska was pretty good. I don't know. But anyway,
he was a real dick in Up Periscope. That's all I know.
All right,
or Down Periscope.
Well, don't spoil it.
Down Periscope. Come now. Let's not besmirch that wonderful Kelsey Grammer piloted vehicle.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I love that movie. I'm not besmirching anything.
Of course you do. Yeah, so that's my reference point. So Harry Dean Stanton is like fully super old in this movie. Doesn't really matter.
Right.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. So he has this flashback, and he immediately knows, like, oh, something's weird. And so he doesn't know what's going on, but, like, he knows he's being targeted, obviously. It was his desk, like, literally, like, it's very clear that it was his desk that some weird bomb went off on. So he, like, immediately sort of assumes this, like, action hero persona, like apropos of having no skills or anything, like he just like jumps into it and jumps down a garbage chute. In this movie, I'm imagining like lots of inexplicably dangerous stunts, like MacGruber style, where it's just like total chaos the whole time. But yeah, so he jumps down a garbage chute, and this is where we meet Isaac Hayes. So.
Okay.
Isaac Hayes, like, initially to me felt like sort of a bad guy henchman kind of casting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure why, because the only thing I know that he's actually been in is South Park. So,
wait, I have a joke. I have a great joke for this scene, because there's got to be some jokes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so Isaac Hayes sees Kurt Russell fall out of this garbage chute, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he walks over and he's like, "Did I just see you fall out of a garbage chute?" And Kurt Russell goes, "Shut your mouth." And Isaac Hayes goes, "I'm just talking about that shaft."
Oh, damn.
Because he did the theme song to Shaft.
That's a good one.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And I think our audience is smart enough to realize that.
Yeah, I see no reason to have that call out. That seems perfectly in place in this nightmare. Yeah. we might as well. So, instead of, like, bad guy henchman, Isaac Hayes is, like, a maintenance guy, like a well-to-do sort of, like, just trying to sort of get by in life and do his thing. But, like, he kind of knows Kurt. Like, he's one of those, like, hey, how you doing every day kind of relationships. So he sees him falls into this dumpster, and he pops out of it, and immediately Kurt Russell's, like, freaking out. And Isaac Hayes, as happens in, like, many action movies, is, like, immediately, like, let's jump into action. He's just like, what's going on? Let me help. Like, for no reason. Like, a normal person would just be like, I don't want to be any part of this. But he's just like, yep, let's do it. So he's like, how can I help? What's going on? Kurt, again, doesn't really know what's going on, but he knows he has to sort of, like, get out of this situation. So he asks Isaac, and he agrees to drive him, like, sort of away. He just happens to... There's, like, a maintenance van sitting around, and, you know, convenience in action movies is sort of always a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we eventually get to Isaac Hayes' backstory, because he absolutely needs to be a sympathetic character. Sure. But, like... I'm imagining him, like, as I kind of mentioned, he's just, like, a family man. He's, like, trying to make it in, like, a Brooklyn townhouse that he grew up in. And he's got a family and two kids and, like, just keeping his head down and doing the right thing and whatever. But now he's all tangled up in this because, like, he's trying to be a nice guy.
This all seems pretty antithetical to the real Isaac Hayes.
Right, he's, you know, had some strange missteps in recent decades, I guess. But
hey, he could play against type, it's fine.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely a talented enough actor for that.
Well, like, that's why I was kind of confused. I was like, well, like, not technically an actor at this point, right? Like, more of a musician, so I don't know, but...
Sure.
Yeah, but, you know, he's doing his best, so...
So, right. Kurt Russell and Isaac Hayes are now teamed up due to extraordinary circumstances.
Yep, as always. Yep. I mean, I mentioned, like, this is cliche as hell. Like, we're just leaning into it. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so they get in the van. They drive frantically around Manhattan. Isaac Hayes notes that they'll need gas, or they're definitely not going to make it off of the island. This is, like, a classic thing, right? So they stop, Isaac is filling up, and Kurt goes into the gas station to get, like, food. I don't know, they always end up in the gas station. Like, this is a very cliche scene coming up. He goes into the gas station to get food, and then he, like, glimpses up at a television where his, like, mugshot, which I don't know why you would even have a mugshot, but it's on the TV, and it's, like, you know, like, most wanted, fugitive, whatever. So, like, he's now public enemy number one.
Maybe it's like a glamour shot. Like, he got them made for his acting career, and then, you know, it never took off. So.
Sure, yeah.
He's just got all those headshots just sitting around, and somebody found one. Yeah.
So, like, in his head, he's going, like, ah, oh, man, I'm glad they finally got some use, but, like, why this? Yeah, yeah. That
makes sense. $40 well spent. Thanks, Walmart.
So, yeah, he notes that he's been branded a terrorist and apparently, like, anti-American for materials found at his apartment, and that he attempted to kill several of his coworkers. So he's being sort of blamed for the explosion that just happened.
Sure.
Last known whereabouts are Midtown Manhattan. All the bridges are now sealed off, and thus he must escape from New York.
Right.
And, like, this is late for the credits, but, like, maybe this whole thing was pre-credits. I don't know. Probably not.
Holy crap.
How long is this movie?
Yeah, dude.
Honestly, we're about halfway through, but, like...
Okay.
So this is a very unconventional credit placement. I don't think the Directors Guild is going to be happy about that.
This is like the director had to get some... Like, he had to get his little bits in there somewhere, so this is... Sure. He's going off the rails slightly, yeah. He makes a quick exit from the store... but again, for no reason whatsoever, he hears the payphone ring, and the camera just zooms into the payphone.
Oh, right, because this is the past. There's payphones. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is like 90s, right? So, yeah.
Right.
So, tapping into his newfound innate tactical instincts, which again, like, so he had this flashback and whatever, it's all coming back to him, and he's starting to realize, like, something's weird about this, but, like, I'm somehow, like, suddenly imbued with these, like, powers of, like, instinct and military training and all of that kind of stuff. So he answers the phone thinking, well, it's just, yeah, Deus Ex Machina, whatever. Enter Harry Dean Stanton. He's on the other end of the line, and he says, "Hello, Snake." And this is where we get the first... I don't know what his name was before this, but this is where we get Snake.
So, like, Snake is maybe his former code name that he doesn't remember.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Something like that, yeah.
Sure.
So Kurt somehow recognizes the voice without really, again, knowing, like, where it's coming from. But he asks him, like, what's going on? Why are you doing this to me? Again, this is sort of... He has very limited details to go on, so he's just kind of, like, confused at this point. Harry Dean expresses surprise that he doesn't remember more. And he asks, so you don't remember the operation? You don't remember getting your entire team killed?
Is this a reverse Manchurian candidate?
Yeah, maybe. Mm. In the spirit of, perhaps.
I was thinking, okay, sure. There's a lot of Total Recall happening, too.
Yeah, it might have... Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair.
Mm. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
No, sure, not at all.
So they have some short conversation, or maybe there's, like, another flashback or something. But exposition-wise, it comes out that Harry Dean was the leader of a special ops team comprised of his own son, which I don't... Yeah, oh, yeah. You can see where this is going.
I sure can.
And so here, I was, like, out of actors at this point, but I'm thinking, like, a young Josh Duhamel. Like, I'm thinking, like, Transformers Josh Duhamel.
So a young time displaced Josh Duhamel.
Yeah, I guess he would have been, like, 10 when this movie happened, but I don't know.
We can move
either
on.
Way.
Yeah.
So the son and Snake and a bunch of other, like deep, like... dark cover operative guys, like really highly trained guys,
like Lee Van Cleef.
Sure, yeah. I mean, in hindsight, I suppose, yes.
An actor we told you was in this movie.
Yeah, I should have written that down, I guess. You know,
no,
it's okay, keep going.
All right. Well, so it's revealed that the mission in question that Harry Dean is talking about was a suicide mission from the start, orchestrated by Harry Dean for monetary gain.
Mm-hmm.
And the
so
idea
he sold his
was
own
like,
son out.
Well, the idea was like somehow, like his son didn't know about it, but somehow the son would be the only one to make it out. And like,
sure,
it would net him like hundreds of millions of dollars or something. Like he like got money from some shitty country somewhere else. And like, it was a real bad scene and whatever.
Who did we hate in the '90s?
So I'm trying to think like,
mm-hmm,
I don't know. Nothing really springs to mind.
William Hurt. Cause he could work. He's the bad guy from Big and the dad from Home Alone.
Oh, I thought Seth was talking about countries, but
I was talking
about
countries.
Okay. But yeah, fuck William Hurt. He sucks.
William Hurt as Libya.
Yeah, right. Oh, sure, Libya works, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. William Hurt as Gaddafi. Yeah. Libya. Yeah.
It's colorblind casting, you know. It can't be offensive.
Oh boy.
Oh, right. Boy.
Except always.
Okay, so then throughout this mission, something went wrong, and Kurt's the only one that made it out. The son dies, but like he had some like traumatic brain injury and doesn't remember anything. So the government, you know, like takes him back in and satisfied that he doesn't actually remember anything, and that it wasn't really his fault. And like, I guess Harry Dean sort of like disappears into the mist and like is sort of quintessential bad guy at this point.
So Snake is his secret son.
No.
Oh, okay.
We could go that way, but
no, keep going.
So Snake makes it out and the government's like, oh, he actually doesn't remember anything. So we're just going to like make up a backstory for him and like sort of put him into witness protection without him actually knowing it, you know?
Okay.
So like he gets this boring life sort of as a result of like sort of needing to not be a part of this anymore and then also not remembering things. So it's like they make up like a car accident or something, and like he wakes up in some apartment, like hospital, and then like goes back to some apartment that they've rented for him, and then just like carries on with this fake life.
Okay.
So obviously Harry Dean Stanton blames Snake for the death of his son and for this missed payout. Despite him actually just being like a pawn in the overall thing, like nobody really knew about this being sort of a disaster except for Harry Dean Stanton. So at the end of the scene, Snake's memory is refreshed like a bit, but not entirely. Like all he really knows now is like he's in some deep shit and he's got to make it out of New York. So now we're gonna skip ahead a bit, tapping into our inner Heat. There's going to be like 45 minutes of various encounters with cops and Harry Dean Stanton henchmen, over the course of which like Snake's willingness to just straight up murder people he perceives as enemies will totally flip. Like he goes from like random desk job to like, I remember how to do this shit. And like, I'm a total ruthless killer and just like shooting up cops and obviously Harry Dean Stanton people and whatever, like just going for it.
Right.
So he really just like wants to save his own life and clear his name. So this eventually leads us to the Ports, which seems like the obvious choice. Like this happens all the time, I think, in movies. He proceeds into sort of his
boat out kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, and so like earlier, he saw on the news thing like they blocked off all the bridges, so he's like, well, this is all I got. So he sees this as his only option. Harry Dean is sort of like sitting off in some like evil lair somewhere, but disappointed in sort of the cops and his henchmen's ability to stop Snake, decides to intervene personally and take him on himself. So this is like the final boss battle, right? So we get to the Ports and Isaac and Snake are like slightly worse for the wear, you know, again, typical action movie. Like you can take like 6 or 7 bullet wounds and still be pretty much fine.
Yeah, you just tie it off.
Yeah, yeah. Tie it off. Hope they winged you or whatever. Yeah, it's fine. So they exit the van and attempt to find like any sort of boat to escape again from New York. And then they turn a corner somewhere like around a shipping container and they're confronted by Harry Dean Stanton. And this is the culmination of the third act. So Snake rattles off the usual nonsense about like, why me? I had nothing to do with this. I should be hunting you down, getting me into this mess, and this horrible life in the first place. And then Harry Dean says, you know, you could have gotten my son out alive, but you turned on the team once you knew it was a setup. I guess like that's kind of a mini twist. Like, I guess maybe Snake sort of saw what was coming and thought like, oh, now I can't trust anybody. Or at least that's Harry Dean Stanton's perception. And so, truthfully, he like really honestly probably couldn't trust anyone and he should have looked out for himself. So we don't really know what happened, but there it is. Harry Dean shames him for sort of relinquishing the life bond with his team, that sort of like soldier camaraderie thing.
The Wookiee life bond.
Sure, yeah. The fact that he betrayed everyone, especially including his son, of course. And then Snake, overcome with anger, like thinking that he's sort of like a valiant guy, you know, he's trying to do right for the most part, fires off a shot and wings Harry Dean, which initiates sort of a big firefight.
Uh-huh.
It's at this point that Isaac Hayes incurs a fatal wound.
Of course.
Yep. As you have to, you know, again, he's like a family man. He had to be a sympathetic character for exactly this reason. And the usual, like, you had no dog in this fight. You did this out of the kindness of your heart dialogue between him and Snake takes place. And Snake vows to avenge him because this is his chance. You know, he doesn't really know what happened with his team, but like this is his chance to make right by somebody at least.
Sure.
So Snake like inexplicably takes out like 15 or 20 of the henchmen, like unharmed. And then blows up a tanker truck and inexplicably many heavy artillery munitions that are just sitting around for no reason fly in all sorts of directions.
Naturally, yeah.
Yeah, despite that like not at all being how those kind of weapons work, to my understanding.
Yeah, at the port, it makes sense, yeah.
Right, they're just like sitting around, or maybe Harry Dean brought them, or like, unimportant, yeah. Doesn't matter. And like Harry Dean is presumed to be crushed under something at this point.
Like the super shredder.
Like, very much like the Super Shredder. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Harry Dean, again, is like a frail 140-year-old man, so, like, not with quite the strength, but like, same principle, yes. Yeah.
140 years old, and he weighs half that much.
Yeah, exactly. So thinking that he's killed Harry Dean, Snake hops into some boat that is, again, just lying around with the keys in it for no reason, and he speeds off. And then we see that, like, a large Stinger missile has gone rogue and hit the Statue of Liberty. So we find ourselves back at the opening scene in real time. Snake rides off into the Atlantic as the Statue of Liberty crumbles, again, sort of reminiscent of the first scene. And lots of, it's like wide shot of the city, and there's just like lots of smoke and like fucked up buildings, and like New York is not better for having dealt with Snake, obviously. And then we roll credits. We roll most of the credits, and at the very end, we see Harry Dean Stanton crawl from the wreckage and then escape
like
via
the
his helicopter. Yeah, I mean, yeah, literally like the Super Shredder. Well, I don't think Super Shredder had a helicopter, but like Harry Dean does. And like the one guy that made it out was the pilot somehow, whatever. And he escapes via helicopter like right as all the cops show up and are like, what the hell's going on? And so that obviously, I know there's an escape from L.A. This obviously sets
that
up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. And so back to the real timeline, the movie opens to sort of moderate to bad reviews, but it nets $200 million. So after the first week, they greenlight Escape to L.A. and everybody's happy.
All so, right.
That's my whole thing.
I mean, that's a very plausible movie.
I was just waiting for Captain Barbossa and the Black Pearl to show up and save Snake.
Well, I mean, there is only one enemy in mind. I feel like there could have been three to four more, and that's true.
Yeah. Well, yep, so that's true.
I've got the I've got here the as our custom the IMDb quick synopsis here.
Okay.
I'm gonna pick the shortest one that I see. I can read that to you. In 1997, when the U.S. president crashes into Manhattan, now a giant maximum security prison, a convicted bank robber is sent in to rescue him.
Oh boy, I was fucked from the jump.
Here's the thing I do want to point out, though, Zach. Like, the broad strokes were so wrong. But a lot of the little parts of it, you got way right.
Yeah, like ex-special forces and things like that.
Yeah,
it's always that, though. I mean, again, like, you just pick out generic action movie stuff. You can't go wrong, right?
Well, the bridges are closed. You got that right.
Sure. I mean, the whole of Manhattan as a prison is, like, a pretty important detail.
Harry Dean Stanton leaving Kurt Russell's character to die at some point. You got that. Mm-hmm. Like,
okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so... The actual movie.
Which I love, by the way.
Yeah, it's fun and totally bazonkers.
Okay.
So, first up, I want to talk about the soundtrack, which is, to me, the best part of this. It's like a sinister take on me, except turning...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how would you characterize it, Lee?
I mean, Aha's Take on Me? Is that
what... Yes, well, that is what I mean.
So Take on Me in minor.
Yeah.
Kind of. Okay. I mean, so John Carpenter still makes music, even though he hasn't directed in a few years. Releases albums and tours. He's really into synths.
Yeah. Mm.
And he just... It's really, like, cool. It feels very atmospheric, but also at the same time, it's got this like really kind of cool vibe to it that I really enjoy. Okay. This one especially, I really like the score to this movie.
Yeah, it's great.
All right.
Second up, the fashion.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so spectacular. So exactly. This movie was made in what, 81?
80 or 81.
Yeah.
Let me check.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah, it's pretty far back there.
I really thought it was 90s. Okay.
1981.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And there's just leopard print everything.
Oh, yeah.
And
Harry Dean Stanton wears the jauntiest scarf I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's like Doctor Who levels of jaunt.
So wait,
enormous painter's jacket. Like a jacket that is both a jacket and a painter's smock. Oh, it's gorgeous.
Is HDS a bad guy? Or is he... good guy turn bad guy?
Okay, so let's maybe go through real quick what happens in this incredibly fascinating movie.
You should probably do this part because I will get too excited about it and go with that.
Okay, so the premise is that in the year 1988, crime increases by 400%.
That's a weird sort of interval, but all right, cool.
Yep, 400%. And now it is 1997, and Manhattan is the only prison in the United States, but the entire island is the prison.
I mean, a lot of open land and space in Manhattan. It seems like the best option for a huge prison, yeah.
Really, yeah.
Sure.
So it's a the U.S. is totalitarian, and they're clearly like socialist slash communist terrorists, and they crash the president's plane.
And ironically, he's on his way to like a peace summit when they do it.
Yeah. Of course, sure.
Yeah, and so Lee Van Cleef, whose probably most famous role that I can come up with off the top of my head was the bad in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Okay, I was going to say, I got to look this person up. When you said that earlier, I was like, nothing, yeah. Yeah,
and he has just the most ridiculous earring in this movie.
Oh, yeah, he's got quite the stink face, yeah, all right, cool.
Yeah, and so they try and they fail to get the president out using Black Ops, and then Kurt Russell, for some reason, is in the processing facility to go into the prison, and they're like, ha ha ha, we're going to make you do this.
Okay.
So they put bombs in his neck.
Oh, that thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they give him a glider plane to like stealthily fly into New York City.
See, this is why I didn't go this route. You can't make that shit up. Like, that's
oh yeah, it's a little too bazonkers.
Yeah, you're just like, there's a wheel with a bunch of crazy bullshit on it, and they're just spinning it for every black one. Like that doesn't make any fucking sense at all.
And they're just throwing knives at the wheel too. Yeah, so it has another vector.
There's actually a lot of knife throwing in this movie. So
there is a lot of knife throwing. You're right.
Sure, sure.
Snake Bliskin. In radio contact and all sorts of things and has all the weapons and is wandering around the city and eventually meets Harry Dean Stanton, who is called Brain, I believe, and he works for the King of New York, who is Isaac Hayes.
Wow.
His title is the Duke, but he's really the King.
So the United States has gone just really off the rails in like 7 years. That's remarkable. Okay.
Oh no, this takes place in 1997.
Okay. So this is
Sure.
Still, wow. We have a prison and there's a Duke.
I mean, he's the self-appointed Duke of New York.
Yeah, he's the El Chapo of the prison situation.
Yeah, he's like, you know, better to rule in hell than serve in heaven.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
I'm not sure Isaac Hayes had a fall from grace in this way, but
I mean, sure. Maybe there's a prequel that was unfilmed.
Oh boy. Yeah. Anyway, there isn't a whole lot more substance to it. They like have to try to escape New York once Kurt Russell locates the president, and they have to try to get out.
But so Kurt is like ostensibly a good guy, right? Like he's trying to do good things in this.
Yeah, but he's an asshole the entire time. Like he's an anti-hero.
Oh, all right, okay.
He's got a just if you can. One thing I know that you know about this movie, Zach, it's because I have drunkenly sent you a picture of the pants he wears in this movie several times.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, that sounds right. Yeah. Okay.
It's amazing, like gray, black, and white diagonal striped pants that are skin tight and have cargo pockets, and I just want them.
Yeah. And his top is also pretty spectacular because it's like a super tight tank top with two zippers at the shoulders.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. That's so like standard prison outfit. That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So you can
plus an eye patch.
Oh yeah, he does have an eye patch.
Oh shit. I did know eye patch. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, but you did make a really good point before you started your description in that women really don't have a role in this movie either.
And there's like a good up.
Barbeau's in this, right? Like, how does she even come into play? Like, I can't. I literally can't imagine any.
She is a. She is Brain's girlfriend and was given to Brain by the Duke.
The literal line is to keep him happy.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yeah.
He's a 140-year-old man. What's he going to do with anything? Give him, like, a crossword puzzle. It'll take him, like, 4 years.
A nice cup of weak tea.
Yeah. He'll be dead before then.
Yeah, the only other woman I think that shows up in the entire movie is eaten by cannibals in, like, the second scene.
Oh, cannibals. Yes. Yeah, sure.
Famously credited as the girl in the chock full of nuts.
Okay. Man, I gotta say, I can't wait to watch this movie. This sounds awesome.
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty spectacular.
I would like to add that the person who I think is maybe the worst actor to have ever won Best Actor is in this movie.
Who is that?
The cabbie. The guy who plays cabbie. Ernest Borgnine.
Oh, it is Ernest Borgnine.
Oh, Borgnine. Boy. Did he win?
He's like ferrying a snake around New York, and it's insane.
Oh. So he's my Isaac Hayes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Except stupider.
Kinda. Okay. Neat.
So, that's the rundown. Lee, how do you want to vote for this?
Well, I guess I need to point out that I really do love Escape from New York, and I actually think that John Carpenter is my favorite director.
Oh,
so,
I see where this is going. All right, land on me.
I give Escape from New York, like, an 8.
Mm-hmm.
I give Zach's Escape from New York, like, a 6.5 for being escapist good fun.
Oh, that even seems generous. I don't know. I'm really liking this actual Escape from New York, now that you've described it.
Yeah, I would probably go and say that The Escape from New York, the original, is insane enough to warrant, like, a 6.5. And then Zach's is insane enough in a different way. And I'll give it a 6.4.
I mean, okay. I feel like I did fully admit, like, it's not a good movie, but, like, man, it would have sold some tickets. We're getting butts in seats. Yeah.
It is entirely the type of movie that it is. Like, it's perfectly that the type of movie it is.
Yeah, it's like a Last Action Hero sort of situation.
Right, yeah, like all those weird ones. Like, they all did okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing here on IMDb, actual Escape from New York got a 7.2 with nearly 100,000 votes. So that's, like, pretty good for an action movie. There's not a lot of good action movies.
I think it's pretty, like, roundly considered a cult classic, so.
Yeah. It tops off at, like, 97 minutes, so it's not too long.
Oh,
either.
Oh, so you guys got off easy. That's bullshit.
Hey, I had to watch all of that Pirates of the Caribbean movie, dude.
That's true.
So Lee has gotten off easy.
He had to watch
Heat, I don't know,
and Pirates of the Caribbean, so his
okay, so we're all just screwed.
Is way up there.
Yeah, I do recall we have this sort of running list going, and The Godfather, any of them are on there, and fuck, I just don't want to be one of the people that has to watch that.
Okay, so now I guess we should kind of roll out and talk about what the next movie is.
Yeah, so I think, so we've all done one now, hopefully to moderate success. I mean, again, Seth's was better.
Seth's was best, still.
That's an axiom of our universe now.
Yep.
And,
it's natural.
Yep. We've all done one. We're going to bring some special guests in, I think, on alternating weeks. So we'll throw some people in the mix, and then we'll sort of go back to us three on every other week. So next week, we're going to have our buddy Lucas come in, and we're going to do Chinatown, a classic from what I hear. I have not yet watched this, but I guess all three of us will.
I'll watch it again.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So it should be fun. So I guess that does it for this week. Again, if you want to comment on future movies, fakingmovies.wordpress.com, and we will see you next week.
Yep.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.